The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
The phrase that caught my eye this weekend came out of Russia. It was from a general Putin supporter who said, "This may be the beginning of the last war of mankind." It's a little sobering. More than 60 dead, over 1,000 wounded, and yet another chemical weapons attack inside of Syria. Syria is denying it. Russia is denying it. It's exactly a year ago, to the week, that President Trump retaliated with 59 cruise missiles after the last chemical attack inside Syria. The images, if you had the stomach to see them, of the men, women, and children lying dead or foaming at the mouth, that reportedly prompted the president to strike last year, they were just as gruesome this year. The UN has called for an emergency meeting for some time today, but really, does anyone expect anything to actually come from the UN? When Assad used chemical weapons 12 months ago, the UN Security Council was blocked from retaliation by a veto from Russia. It's going to be exactly the same scenario today, and all eyes will then shift to President Trump, who has to decide, do I act unilaterally? That's what he did last year. For the first time ever, in a tweet sent yesterday, the president called Putin out directly, placing the blame squarely on his shoulders for, quote, backing animal Assad, end quote. Russia has responded in their typical Russian manner, deny, deny, deny. Russia apparently thinks the chemical attacks just materialized out of thin air. They say this is a false flag. First in the UK, now in Syria. Putin is in danger of becoming the international Alex Jones with all of the false flags. And the U.S. government is behind all of this conspiracy. The next thing you know, Putin is going to be ripping his shirt off on TV while trying to sell you supplements. I mean, it's getting that ridiculous. So the question is now, will Trump retaliate? Should the president retaliate? And what does it mean? Eight missiles struck a Syrian airbase last night. Russia has accused Israel for the attack. We denied it. No one has claimed responsibility yet, but if the U.S. attack occurs, it'll probably be after today's UN Security Council meeting. Military action inside Syria has never been more dangerous. Both Russia and Iranian military troops are all over the place. Reports last night indicated Russian air defense units were scrambling to prepare for an imminent U.S. attack. If Russian soldiers die in a U.S. cruise missile strike, this whole thing changes dramatically. But I guess we can thank the Obama administration for this. Susan Rice, do you remember when she and the rest of the Obama administration promised us that Assad got rid of all of its chemical weapons, that they had all been turned over to Russia? And Putin was, you know, there to say, oh, no, we verified. Do you remember all that? Because it was supposedly a master stroke in diplomacy after the debacle of the infamous red line from President Obama. Yes, they crossed his red line, but he used that to have Assad's chemical weapons removed from the country, and Putin saw to it. Uh-huh. Yet another lie from that administration. Weren't these guys considered the grown-ups? The responsible intellectuals when it came to foreign policy? Take a look around at the world. Libya is now a failed state. Iran is taking over the entire Middle East. And Assad is still using chemical weapons, and apparently now with Vladimir Putin's blessings. We're in a war that's been undeclared. Most Americans don't even know about it in Yemen. This is what the grown-ups are responsible for? Okay. Thanks, President Obama.
It's Monday, April 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We brought Jason Bertrillin, who is our chief researcher and military expert, former military intelligence, who's been watching Russia and the Middle East with me now for several years. Where are we? Jason?
Massive headache. That's where I mean,
it's John Bolton's first day on the job, and they're saying, you know, hey, this is bad because he's a hawk. Well, no, he was actually against the Syria thing. Yeah. He was against this.
Yeah, no, the quote that you just picked out from what was that general, that retired lieutenant general?
Archduke. No. Let's see here. General Evgeny Bruinsky.
Yeah. So I think what he was referring to is so the war to end all wars basically is what the Cold War was supposed to materialize into, which was World War III. But the Cold War, like the things that we saw during the Cold War, were nothing compared to what's going on right now. Like the sanctions, all the threats, all that stuff would have escalated the Cold War into a whole other playing field. But we're starting at that right now as we go into this next Cold War. So it's already escalated. And so he was talking about, I remember in one of the interviews he just did, he said that, well, you know, what would kick off actual kinetic confrontation? And he straight up said, well, the conflict in Syria, that's what will kick it off. So if we retaliate, let's say we retaliate, and the area where this chemical attack happened, where some of these things are happening, is around the Damascus area. So if we strike towards Damascus, Russian troops are all over the place there. If we do that, then Russia will respond. How will they respond? Well, they'll start hitting our naval assets that are in the Mediterranean, in that area that launched the cruise missiles. So it'll be direct U.S. Kinetic operations that will kill Russians, and then Russians will respond by attacking the United States Navy. That will take this to a whole other level, and I think that's what he was referring to.
There's no way we don't respond to an attack. No way they don't respond to an attack. I mean, Putin came out this weekend and said, you know, this is not going to end well. Don't do it. Don't do it, because we will have to respond back to you. So I don't know where we're headed, but it doesn't seem to be any place good in the Middle East.
This cycle has just got to stop. I mean, it has got to stop. It has escalated beyond. After the Cold War, it kept on going. But I would say after 9/11, it has ramped up to a whole other level, and it has got to stop. We have got to put some restrictions on where we're, you know, influencing the world, where we're getting involved, and all the things that we're doing. Like, we don't have to. I saw a quote from President Erdogan, Turkey, that he's been doing all kinds of. He's basically invaded northern Syria, and he's going after Kurds, killing Kurds. But he had the audacity to call out the West and say, if you don't respond to this, then you just don't care about, you know, Muslims. Jeez. You don't care about the region. Why? Why is it always put on us to respond? Like, you're trying. Turkey is trying to get so involved right now. Look, this is your backyard. You need to respond to this. This is, you know, this is your job. This is not our job.
They don't want to respond because they know that Iran is involved. They need us to be the bad guys here, so they can sit on the sidelines and not piss off everybody else in the neighborhood.
You're exactly right. Everyone, because we're so involved in the region over all the years, everyone plays us off of everybody.
Yes.
You notice that. Like, mm-hmm. they call us the bad guys. Mm-hmm. Iran calls us the bad. Russia. I mean, everyone plays us as the bad guys. Now, if you notice, all the meetings that are taking place right now are between, they're not even including us. It's between Turkey, Iran, Russia, and Syria. They're the ones that are doing all these talks, and they're coming up with all these like cooperation packs. They're not even involving us, but they're still playing us off of one another. We need to get the heck out. That's it. The problem is that we've set up the region now to where Iran is completely going to take over. They are. Like, so if we're in this conundrum now to where if we back out, we basically just hand over the region to Iran.
And then what happens to Israel?
You're exactly right.
I mean, that's why Israel struck last night. And it may be that Israel is our proxy in this. I mean, I can't imagine it, but maybe Israel becomes our proxy. Just like, you know, Syria is. We're in a proxy war with Russia right now. And here's something else. The sanctions have hit Russia hard. So if you were for sanctions, and I am for sanctions, this has stuck a stake, not in their heart, but in the chest cavity. It is close. We hit their aluminum industry, which is very important to them. What's happened?
Second largest aluminum company in the world. Their shares have lost 50% of their value since Friday. just off of U.S. sanctions. That's
so,
it.
So imagine if GM lost 50% of its value because of something Vladimir Putin did. We wouldn't be happy. It would not sit well. That's not the only thing. Tell me about the ruble.
So the ruble dropped to about 60 rubles per $1. And that's the lowest it's been, I think, in a couple years.
We have a Cold War and a hot war, but it's a proxy war going on at exactly the same time. It is so easy to make a mistake here. And if we make a mistake, the world changes. The world changes overnight. I don't think people really truly understand. And I'm going to do something on television tonight. I need to spend 10 minutes with you and laying it out on the chalkboard of all of the things that are happening right now. We all have come into this this feeling of comfort because the election happened. And so half of the country trusts that, you know, the right half of the country will keep us secure. Well, the other half doesn't. Well, nothing really has changed. Obama's proxy war in Yemen is still happening. Obama's Syrian war is still happening. The effects of Libya is still happening. The corruption in Russia that we were dealing with still happening. All of these things that were going on, they haven't stopped. And in fact, they're getting worse. Now, Trump is playing hardball, which I generally support. I think that, you know, I want a president to make it very clear. We know what happened to the world when the United States said, you know, well, there's a red line, but it's kind of a pinkish line. And there is no actual, I mean, we live in a postmodern world. There is no actual red. Who are you to define red? We know what happened. We're paying that price now. But we have to be really careful because everything seems to be coming into one really bad place. And that includes China as well.
I'd love to get an answer from you, Jason, and I know you don't have one, to the idea that how did Syria commit a chemical weapons attack when there was a major international agreement that disarmed Syria of its chemical weapons just a few years ago?
And Putin verified that those chemicals didn't exist.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's been verified. Obama, Putin working together. This was knocked out years ago, and now all of a sudden they have them again? How is that possible?
Yeah. Unpossible.
It's unpossible.
Unpossible.
You fail English? That's impossible.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, what side does China come down on this?
It's a good question. I think that China will probably veto. I think that China will probably abstain from any actual action.
If it went to hot war, whose side are they on?
They just actually did a military pact with Russia.
Holy Jesus.
So they're signaling that that's where they're going.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't know if I actually mean the thank you very much. It might have been better if I could have lived in my blissful ignorance there on that. All right. What do you have for an emergency? Do you know that Venezuela was a very prosperous country, had all kinds of oil and wealth, and it was, you know, it was the shining example. And then they went into socialism and the whole thing fell apart and they couldn't stop spending. See if this sounds familiar. And so they ran their economy into the ground. Do you know what the average salary is now? The average salary for somebody who's living in Venezuela, a monthly salary. What do you think it is? You know what it is.
I want to screw you. I want to screw up your bit so badly, okay. But no, I'll wait.
It's $7. $7 a month. That's why the average Venezuelan, the average, has lost 25 pounds in the last 12 months. It's not a new diet program. They're not getting healthy. They're starving to death. I want you to be prepared for any eventuality. I want you to go to My Patriot Supply right now. You can get a 4-week emergency food supply, breakfast, lunch, dinner, for $99. They deliver it right to your home. It's really good food. You know, I have to tell you, do you remember this is like 15 years ago when people were eating dog food here in America? The elderly were eating dog food. This is such a good deal that I don't know why people don't buy this and just live off of this, you know, in tough times. I don't know. Maybe because it's, you know, emergency. Well, that kind of seems like an emergency, but it's a really good value. It's very nutritious, and it is there for you for 25 years. You save it for an emergency. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, $99 a month's worth of food. PrepareWithGlenn.com. PrepareWithGlenn.com, 800-200-7163. 800-200-7163. PrepareWithGlenn.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So I touched on this a second ago, that there is a Chicago-based equity firm specializing in real estate investment, and they have sent letters to the city and the state of Connecticut, cities and the state of Connecticut, offering to spend $2 billion to purchase publicly owned office building, healthcare facilities, and transit-related properties. Anything else in the state and municipal governments might be willing to part with. There is a catch. They're insisting on 7.25% annual yield on the investment, and they're going to do it by raising the rent and leasing the properties back to the city and the state. So that will give them the money that they are short for, $2 billion. However, how are they going to pay for this? So they'll take this money, they'll sell all of the assets, but they'll continue to spend money until the administration changes, until you get fiscally responsible people in there. And that doesn't mean necessarily Republicans. Until you get people who say, look, this is a house of cards and it's just not going to work anymore. You can't sell the assets and then spend it. By the way, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, this is the equivalent to the, you know, FDIC. This is the one that backs up all of the state and big pensions. It's completely insolvent already. These pensions haven't really started to collapse yet, and that's what's collapsing Connecticut. So there's no money left to be able to grab these insolvent pensions. That's what's going to collapse California. That's what's going to collapse Illinois. That's what's going to collapse Michigan and Connecticut and all of these other big states, New York, Pennsylvania.
And at that point, too, if those big states start falling, even the states that have done it relatively right are going to fall as well.
Of course, it's because it's going to be pushed onto everybody else.
Yeah.
And they will. What they'll end up doing is just printing money. I mean, it's this is not a happy scenario. Now, there is some good news. Every time I go out to California for the last few years, I have told you there is something happening. There is something happening in California. And I am finding these people who are on the left and the right who are finally coming to common sense. And they're going, you know, I've had deep liberals go, you know, I've taken a look at the 10th Amendment and I think you guys were right on that. Oh, you think? We're starting to see the unum come back, and it's going to start happening in the states that are the most under pressure. If there is a group of rock solid common sense people there. Now in California, I think there's enough farming. There's enough people in the rural areas that believe like this is out of control. There was a story on Fox News in their op-ed section that, you know, they have Los Alamitos was the community that said, you know what? No, we are not going to be a refugee city. We're not going to be a sanctuary city. We're not following California. We're going to follow the federal government. Well, now there are several cities and towns all around California that are starting to do this. But it's lit the fire of something that I think has been smoldering in California for a while. And I want to talk about that a little later on in the program. But that fire is common sense, people standing up that understand
Glenn
what common sense
Beck.
Is.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So it's Monday. Let me share some good news with you. A couple of weeks ago, I had Chad and Logan Blythe on my television program. It was on World Down Syndrome Day. And Chad and his 15-year-old son, Logan, they live in a place called Payson, Utah. And Chad and his wife, Diane, moved to Utah from Illinois 4 years ago because the schools were better for Logan, and he had just better options. Logan has Down syndrome, and he has been in the Boy Scouts for the last 4 years. He has seen great improvement with his dexterity and also his speech because he joined the Boy Scouts. He also is in Special Olympics and has earned swimming medals, and he joined the Boy Scouts, and everybody understood what the deal was. There are things that Logan can't do. He operates with the mentality of about a 4 or 5 year old, and he needs, you know, special attention, but he is completing things, and he's not completing them necessarily to the exact handbook because he can't, but he's completing them to the best of his ability. He's been earning merit badges. Now, this has all been understood. Everybody in the Boy Scouts understood this. And he was working his way to an Eagle. Now, he got all of the merit badges and did the work at his level. The Scoutmasters, they take a picture with him, and it gets into the press. And the National Scouts see this and say, this is wrong. He hasn't really completed anything. He can't really be an Eagle. Well, that seems a little callous. And I'm not one for giving trophies to people who don't earn it. But I think this is a little bit different. And so they told him and his parents that there's no way that he's going to be able to go on and be an Eagle and to take away all of the merit badges. As you can imagine, a boy who has been working for 5 years for that, had started his Eagle project, it didn't go over well with the family. So then what happens? We find out about it. It happened a while back. We found out about it on Down Syndrome Day, and we bring the family on TV and we talk about it. And there's been kind of an outcry from the local community, and we have an update for you. Chad is joining us now. Hello, Chad. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Boy, could we use some good news on a Monday?
Yes, definitely.
So tell me what happened since last we spoke.
Well, approximately 2 weeks ago, we actually met with the National Commissioner of the BSA. He was very apologetic for everything that we've been going through here and assured us that the merit badges that Logan has earned, he has indeed earned, and they still qualify, and that Logan has every right and will earn his Eagle Scout.
That's great.
Now,
can you tell me what their concern was, or what happened, how this broke down and how it was finally solved, and what it means to them for future cases?
Well, I'm not exactly 100% sure what happened there. They did indicate to me there was a bit of a miscommunication within the National Boy Scout organization itself. I wasn't entirely sure on that, but I do know going forward for them, they have already made several changes that will allow kids with special needs to actually request alternative merit badge requirements, not just alternative merit badges. So, for example, if you have, if you can't dive to the bottom of a pool, you can actually request that it be substituted with maybe holding your breath for 5 seconds underwater.
And this is not for the average person. This is for someone with Down syndrome or, you know, or significant disabilities.
Correct. Yes, it is not for a normal individual that can do those activities themselves. It's for someone that has some kind of mental or physical handicap that will not allow them to do so.
So, Chad, you know, tell a story of the other Eagles in the area when they found out about your son's case.
Not just the Eagles in my area, but across the country. They were outraged. Many of them volunteered their Eagle badges and Eagle Scout awards to my son. I think I lost count at over 100.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, they were more than forthcoming and supportive in our efforts here. So they've been great. It's been amazing to see just how much they were willing to support us, get behind us, and just cheer us on. I think we had an Eagle Scout as far away as London, England offer their Eagle Scout award.
That is really remarkable. Really remarkable.
Oh, yes, quite.
So you broke it to your son, the news. How did he take it?
He was fine with it. Right now we're in the middle of the Special Olympics season here in Utah, So he's principally focused there. 2 weeks ago he got his latest silver medal for basketball skills, and swimming is coming up. So he's got his mind focused more on that than anything else. And I think once the Special Olympics season is over, which is sometime around the middle of the summer out here in Utah, we'll probably readdress it with him, see if he's interested or not. But as it stands right now, he's more focused on the Special Olympics.
Chad, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
You bet. God bless. So, the Washington Free Beacon put together some clips about Syria. Do we have those, Stu?
Yes.
Because remember, this chemical attack, if you saw the pictures, it was just horrifying. But this chemical attack clearly did not happen because the last administration took care of this problem. And in case you don't remember, the Washington Free Beacon is here to remind you.
Dozens of people reportedly killed, including at least 10 children, hundreds of others injured, and these numbers are very preliminary. What caused this? Right now, it's seen as a gas or chemical attack.
I think ultimately that President Obama is the big winner here.
He is a big, big winner in my estimation.
It turns out we're getting chemical weapons out of Syria without having initiated a strike. So what else are you talking about?
We've got the chemical weapons. We're getting the chemical weapons out of Syria.
Well, Chris, all you have to do is look at the fact that today, the final 8% of chemical weapons were taken out of Syria.
We should commend the administration for the result that they got. The removal of chemical weapons out of Syria is a substantial accomplishment.
We certainly worked with them in Syria to bring all the chemical weapons out of Syria.
We struck a deal where we got 100% of the chemical weapons out.
100% of the declared chemical weapons out of Syria.
We kept chemical weapons or got chemical weapons out of the area.
We got, as you know, last year, all the chemical weapons out of Syria. No small feat.
Syria eliminating its chemical weapons and ultimately having them destroyed by the international community.
Syria would still have a declared chemical weapons stockpile. Right now, they don't. Right now, Bashar al-Assad does not have a declared chemical weapons stockpile. We removed that declared chemical weapons stockpile, and we destroyed that declared chemical weapons stockpile, which means that Bashar al-Assad can't use those chemical weapons against his own people.
And the purpose of the strike was to get the chemical weapons out of Syria. Weapons of mass destruction are taken out of the zone of conflict. And thank God we did that. We are making real progress in Iraq and Syria. And I mean real progress. If Russia can help us, and it is right now, Russia has helped bring about the Iran nuclear agreement. Russia helped get the chemical weapons out of Syria.
The destruction of the Syrian chemical weapons stockpile.
I would have, I think, made a bigger mistake if I had said
yeah, chemical weapons, that doesn't really change my calculus.
So now if you're sitting in a newsroom at CNN, what do you do? Seriously, what do you do? You're like, well, I believe the Obama administration when they said that they got rid of all the chemical weapons. And now Russia is saying that this is a false flag because Syria didn't have any chemical weapons. So who gassed these people? How do you report on that news?
It's going to be really interesting because the left, who was saying we need to be super hard on Syria and we need to take this seriously, now says the opposite, right? You've got the people who were saying that there are no chemical weapons now have to say there are chemical weapons and Trump needs to deal with them and take them seriously. You have the big time Trump supporters on kind of the conspiracy side who have been saying the entire time this is fake news. There is no chemical attacks. These are not attacks done by Syria. Now have Trump on the other side, who's being very tough and speaking out against not only this, but also Putin, which puts the left in another difficult spot because they're saying he's not tough on Putin, but he's being tough on Putin.
This is insane. This is insane. Oh, man, I'm so glad that you're tethered to the truth. Otherwise, I just don't know where you would be now. Let me tell you about Blinds.com. We want to thank them so much for their sponsorship of this program. They've been with us for a very long time, and we're proud to have them as a sponsor because they are really, really, really good. Marlene from Ohio wrote in and said, Blinds.com is by far the most customer-friendly company I have ever experienced. Marlene, I agree with you. Their customer service representatives were knowledgeable about the products, took a lot of time helping me with the selection and the color. The blinds were easy to install, and they look beautiful. The quality is excellent as well, and I highly recommend. Thanks, Marlene, and thanks for giving them a shot after hearing our endorsement on the radio. We appreciate the trust that you've given us, and I'm glad that Blinds.com is more than what we ever say they are. They are really great. Find the perfect blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, and upgrade your home for less than almost anything else you can do in a home improvement. You'll get free samples, free shipping, free design consultation. Plus, they're going to guide you through the installation step by step. So find out yourself why over 20 million Americans have trusted Blinds.com to upgrade their home, making them the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Now through April 22nd, get guaranteed 20% off when you go to Blinds.com/Beck. That's Blinds.com/Beck. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So there is now, I can't believe I'm saying this, and it's serious. There is now a controversy with the storylines of The Simpsons. You know, the cartoon. Apparently people are upset now at Apu's character. He is the Indian character that owns a convenience store. I know. I know.
You can't say that they're good business owners.
Well, you
know. How dare you?
No.
Are you saying all Indians are competent business owners?
No, that's what Hillary Clinton said.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And Joe Biden.
And Joe Biden. Yes. Yes. You can hardly go anywhere now into a convenience store without somebody from India. Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton. They addressed it last night on The Simpsons.
Yeah, there was a documentary, first of all, that it's called The Problem with Apu, apparently. Mm-hmm. I've not seen it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But it says that basically it's okay to make fun of certain groups. And for example, they're saying Indians, right? Where like we see everyone, if they put a black character on that would had a black voice and had black stereotypes, no one would agree with it. But Apu, because he's Indian with Indian stereotypes and an Indian voice voiced by a white guy, that's totally fine. That's their point. So they addressed this in the storyline of The Simpsons last night.
Well, what am I supposed to do?
It's hard to say. Something that started decades ago and was applauded and inoffensive is now politically incorrect. What can you do?
Some things will be dealt with at a later date.
If at all.
And there's a picture of Apu. As they say that, they look at the picture of Apu on the side. And their point being like, yeah, like this is how it started. Everyone was fine with it at the time. And now all of a sudden it's turned into something that is become offensive.
Right. And you have to remember, 25 years.
Yeah.
This has been going on for 25 years. How old were you when you were 25 years ago? Yes, exactly. Very young. Think of the mistakes you were making. And now we're having to decide what is offensive, what isn't on something that's 25 years old.
And honestly, I don't care.
Jeez, look what they have done to white people. Look at how much you made fun of white people. White men, Mormons, people of religion.
Mormons is a great one. I mean, like, the left can't put enough praise on the whatever musical that is, taking on Mormons. They love it. They made it the best musical of the year. It's touring all over the country.
Right.
I mean, and
they love it.
That's like, it's part of what happens in this country. But
get over it.
Yeah. But the funny thing, too, everyone should be able to be a target. If you're a target, it's okay as long as you're a target for everybody. There are some things that we're going to see as offensive now, and these things do change over time. But to sit here and they're upset at that response because they wanted it to be addressed. I think they wanted Apu executed. I think that was the only thing they would actually.
No, I think they wanted him to execute others.
Right, there you go. Yeah. They just want him. They want him to not do the things he's done. So what do you do with that? He becomes a character that only
is a positive. He becomes a doctor.
And they change. Hank Azaria loses his gig. You give Apu a job. An Indian actor comes in and plays Apu, and he only says really boring motivational things. That's what they did with the SAT scores. The SAT. There was a thing. I read a book about the SATs before I took it, and what happened was African Americans complained about the test and said they're not culturally equal. So they put a bunch of questions in about African American culture, and the book that told me how to. You know, prep for the test. I was going to say cheat, but really it's not a cheat. But it said, if it's an option, it will never be bad for African Americans because they put all the questions in. So if you can eliminate the things that look bad out of the answers because you know it's going to be positive. And it's true. At least back then it was.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Remember 2016, the Berlin Christmas market attack where ISIS claimed responsibility and they took a truck and they drove it into a busy crowd at Christmas time. The man, it turned out, was a Tunisian illegal immigrant who was able to elude police for months as he traversed Europe and incited riots at migrant holding centers. He killed 12 people that day. Injured 56. After his bloody murder streak, he was able to make it to Italy before the police there shot him. So the jihadist is dead, but his legacy apparently lives on. On Sunday, a few of his friends led a failed attack on a half marathon in Berlin. Now, this is really important. There was a shooting that happened in Berlin the day before, and it was a mass shooting. Wait a minute. I thought it was hard to get guns in. Oh, pay no attention. The police came out and said, look, this is a white guy. People were trying to, you know, make it into a nationalist kind of Nazi thing. And the police immediately came out and said, no, this guy was seriously disturbed. He had mental health disorders. What a surprise. But then the next day, police buckled down and were watching an event that they were, I'm quoting the police, isolated indications that those arrested aged between 19 and 21 years old were participating in the preparation of a crime in connection with this big event. So the terrorists were deciding that they were going to go in and kill a bunch of people. And they were caught at the last minute. They were planning on using knives for the foiled attack. When asked about the suspects, police spokesman said that they were very vague indications. But because of the high threat level, we immediately started with our police searches and arrests. But at the moment, there are really no concrete indications that an attack on the Berlin half marathon was foreseen. Thankfully, the plot was foiled and no one was injured or killed. Knives. Oh, that reminds me. London is talking now about banning knives. Of course, the four people who died and the 30 who were injured in Munster, Germany on Saturday, mowed down by a car that hit that crowd of people, they were not so lucky, but I'll take the good over the bad.
It's Monday, April 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I don't know if you saw the hero of the Parkland shooting got out of the hospital and what he said. We'll go over that here in a few minutes. He was very, very clear that everybody is letting the victims in the school and, you know, future victims down because they're not actually taking any concrete steps. And he spoke about the sheriff's department and this promise where they weren't going to prosecute anybody who you know, broke the law at school. We'll talk about that. But I wanted to get David Hogg on with us. Now, David Hogg is obviously a very controversial figure and has stirred up an awful lot of passion on both sides. But that's not the David Hogg we're talking to. This is the David Hogg that is receiving death threats, and his parents are being threatened, and he is constantly being mistaken for the other David Hogg. And he wrote a powerful, powerful op-ed in the Wall Street Journal last week where he says, "I support gun rights, and I'm David Hogg." Welcome to the program, David. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So tell me your story of, you know, when this broke and David Hogg started being as vocal as he was, what started to happen to your life?
Well, it was kind of an awful time for that to happen because I was doing a lot of things in my life at the time. I was getting my learner's permit. I was applying for a new bank, a checking account. I was getting a job. I go to college, so I'm here to learn. I'm not here to have people ask me about questions all the time about the news. But it was just people constantly like, are you the David Hogg in Florida? And at first it wasn't a lot of people, but then as he kept getting on the air and more people had a chance of seeing him, then it became more of a everyday thing. And people were responding to all our pictures, like not just my pictures, but my family's pictures on social media, asking questions, making comments, rude comments, and things like that that they wouldn't actually say in person.
So I get this, you know, all the time people say, "Oh, you the Leonardo DiCaprio from the movies." And I'll say, "No, I just look a lot like him." I mean, that happens a lot of the time, and you can't do anything about mistaken identity. However, this turned into trouble for you and your family.
Yeah, so I actually went off social media for a time. I came back, but like people were taking our photos offline and editing them and like putting hog noses on them, which wasn't a big deal, but putting like anti-Semitic things, and my family's not Jewish. We have nothing against Jewish people, but that's just rude for anybody to have to see. People were stopping my little brother because I used to go to school at my little brother's school and asking if the David Hogg in the news was his older brother, which didn't make a whole lot of sense either, because why would I be in Florida and he would be in Charlotte?
So you wrote this op-ed to the Wall Street Journal. How did that come about? And then I want to talk to you a little bit about it.
They actually responded to me on Twitter after I posted a few things on Twitter and asked me to write it, and I did.
Well, it's really well written, and in it you talk about that you are not for gun control. You're the opposite of the other David Hogg, and you said there are other things that we should be doing. You want to share some of that?
Yeah, I feel like more of the issue is education. I think that gun education should almost be like CPR education. So like in your health class or some other class, you should have to learn about what to do in a situation when you see a gun or when somebody approaches you with a gun or things like that. So people just know more. And then when you're procuring a gun, maybe more background checks, But that's the main issue, is just education and knowing how to use one, knowing what to do if you see one. And then, like, even like little children, like elementary school kids, like knowing not to play with that, knowing that that's not a Nerf gun and you can't point that at somebody else.
Do you have guns in your home?
Yes, my father has guns.
And do you go shooting with him, or are they for security, or for, I mean, are you coming from a gun home?
Yes, I have. My dad has taught me all there is to know, well, all that I need to know about guns at my age, and we don't do as much shooting as maybe we would like, but we don't shoot in the city.
And you guys members of the NRA?
No, we are not.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing that your clothes aren't soaked in blood then. You said, look, I stand for the Second Amendment, but I also stand for the other David Hogg's First Amendment.
Yes.
You want to expand on that a bit?
Well, I stand for everybody's right to free speech, and I feel like the only way we'll ever get anything done in this country is if we acknowledge each other's opinions and change on both sides. Not everyone can always be right, especially with differing views.
You wrote, people who aren't willing to budge from their goal make it harder for change to occur. Some of David Hogg's recent actions, like calling sponsors to stop advertising on a commenter's program because she was rude to him, come across as bullying.
Yes. I don't think I was bullied in my life, and I don't find bullying an acceptable way to have anything done. I feel like that's actually going to, even if your cause is good, that's going to make people not like your cause as much because of how you're representing it and how you're trying to get things accomplished.
You say teenagers are smart, but we certainly don't have all of the answers. I'd like to see him soften his tone and be more respectful in delivering his message.
Yes. Well, we haven't gone through everything. We've been in school our whole lives, but we haven't experienced the real world yet. We haven't experienced the entire realm of politics. He's just now getting into like journalism and everything, and that's fine. But there are plenty of people who know a lot more about what he's trying to do than him, and plenty of people who know a lot more than what I'm trying to do than me.
David, I'm sorry for what your family has gone through, but I'm glad to see. Have you had response from this now?
Yeah, people are like, even at my job, people are like, "Oh, are you the David Hogg in the news?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." And they're like, "Oh, I'm so sorry for what you've gone through." And it's real nice to hear people like apologize for actions of other people.
Yeah, good. David, thank you very much. Appreciate it. God bless. You know, he talked about education, shooting education at school. And I've got an amazing story and an artifact. I have to go up to the vault and pull it out of the archives. But I got to share a story with you that will blow your mind on how much the world has changed since the progressive era began. Coming up in just a few minutes. All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about a new sponsor, and this is a sponsor that came to my attention because we went out and looked for people that understood cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, and so we looked for somebody that could explain them, how they work, why they work, what they face, you know, is it going to go up or down, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know everything about cryptocurrencies, and so many people have asked us about this. And I, even with what's happening with cryptocurrencies now, I'm still up, what are you up, Stu, about 8 times your money? If you would have put $50 in, I think we're still up 8 times.
Yeah, it's
up.
I mean, yeah, I think it started last year at 1,000, and now it's still. People are like, "Oh, the bubble's crashed." It's still up 7 times. You're up 7 times your money. Is that a bubble popping? I mean, yeah. I guess if you invested at the peak, you know, yeah. But still, it's a lot of people have made a lot of money on this,
right? So, and I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't think anybody really knows. But we found somebody who the industry says is really the best guy that can explain it and make it easy to understand and help you through this. His name is Tika Tiwari, and he's from the Palm Beach Letter. He's a former Wall Street hedge fund manager who has helped more people profit from cryptocurrencies than anybody. And we asked him to create an education course for you in case you want to look into cryptocurrency. It explains what they are, how they work, which ones he recommends, and how to buy them. I have to tell you, just buying cryptocurrency is so frustrating if you don't know what you're doing. So if you have been thinking about cryptocurrencies in any way, I personally think everybody should have at least $50 or $100 in cryptocurrencies, because this is the future. I don't know how it all pans out and how we get there, but this is the future. So if you are thinking about investing in cryptocurrencies, you must educate yourself first. So check out the exclusive Glenn Beck cryptocurrency course now at smartcryptocourse.com. Do that now at smartcryptocourse.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So when it comes to guns and schools, there's a lot of controversy, and there always has been. And this isn't the first time that people have said, like our just last guest just said, you know, I think that we should have, you know, gun training in school. There should be some sort of training that you know, that shows that you know, gives everybody a basic understanding of what a gun does, gun safety.
It'd be great too if it wasn't just scare tactics, right? It's not just about how you react if some dangerous person comes in with a gun, which is important, right? Everyone should have some basic idea. Who was it? Was it Ben Sherwood years ago who wrote the book about surviving critical moments in your life, and how people think, like, well, you get into a plane crash, you're just dead. And what you find out is that the numbers are not like that. The numbers are, if you're prepared for how to deal with it, a lot of people actually survive. Same thing with, you remember, this is at the time of that really bad fire at the bar in, I think it was Rhode Island, where so many people couldn't get out. And it's just a matter of knowing the escape routes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's important. But it's also about, like, taking the stigma away. There's that negative sort of stigma of guns. And I know this from growing up in the Northeast. Like, people just, generally speaking, think of them as bad. And how do you deal with this bad thing? Instead of understanding what it does, how to use it, the good things that can come with it. And that would be a great place for
yeah.
to go.
It would never, you would never want it in school, because they would find a way to demonize them and make them horrible. Okay, but this isn't the first time. Now, this, what I'm holding is from the Mercury Museum, and I love this. This is from 1906, and this comes from Theodore Roosevelt, and this was a campaign to get gun safety and shooting into our public schools. Now imagine this. Now it's a giant target, and it says, "Who can kill teddy bear?" Okay, that just sounds crazy. Remember, this is the time where Teddy Bear was just getting its name from Theodore Roosevelt, from Teddy Roosevelt. So it shows a bear, and then it has targets all across the bear. Now, this was made for kids. This was made for kids. Mm. So that's one way that things have changed so much in the last 100 years. But there was an outcry. When this went out, the school, the towns were so outraged that the president of the United States would try to get shooting done in schools. And do you know why? Because the locals said, "How dare the federal government try to tell us what needs to happen in our own local schools. We'll put shooting ranges in if we choose to put shooting ranges." They had no problem at the time with putting shooting ranges into school. What they had the problem with was the federal government trying to tell them what to do when it came to educating their kids.
Wow.
Is that not nuts? Look what the progressive era has done. The progressives, Theodore Roosevelt, he's taking that step because the progressives believe they should have the power to tell you what to do in your own town, in your own home, and in your own life. But 100 years ago, people didn't believe that. People didn't think that way. People knew, wait, I'm free. My town will decide what's best. Get away from us. And if we want guns, we'll do guns. If we don't want guns, we won't do guns. But get away from us, federal government. You have nothing to do. To now, everyone is crying out saying the federal government must do these things. The federal government has the ultimate responsibility in keeping us safe, in telling us what we can and cannot do in school and in our own homes. And when we bring up maybe we should have, you know, shooting classes in school, oh my gosh, that's an outrage. You local yokels, you have no idea what you're doing. You're all dangerous. The government needs to restrict you. It's amazing how 100 years of progressive thought has perverted the idea of what it really means to be free in America.
That's a long journey you just described.
100 years.
I mean, 100 years, and I mean, really, it happened a lot faster than that. But I mean, to be able to go to a place where, it should be local control. They talked about there's a school, I believe it's in Idaho, that has already done the arming the teachers thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've done it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not really a police station nearby. Yeah. it's not an option.
Yeah.
So they actually have this. They actually have armed teachers. Stunningly, there's been no school shootings at this school. But I mean, that is something that I think a good chunk of the country understands still, right? There's still a good chunk of the country that understands that, you know, law-abiding gun owners that are properly trained are a real positive influence on the country. But there's huge, we talk about this blue and red sort of divide among the country. That is so real because guns are, in large chunks of the country, are not treated as if they're anything but murderous devices used by bad people.
So I want to take that to someplace else. I want to take that to what happened, what I read about this weekend in Indiana, where these two guys were tired of the potholes. So they went out and they took their own money and they bought asphalt and they're repairing the potholes. Wait until you hear the reaction. No, no, it's not what you think.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So let me show you how things are changing. Now, I think these guys, I want to talk to these guys in about a week because I have a feeling things are going to change for them now that they're getting a national attention, which I would find really unfortunate. There are two men in Indiana that were really tired of waiting for the city to repair potholes. So they started a grassroots organization called Open Source Roads. And they started to make an Indianapolis pothole map and where the really bad ones are. And then they were tired of sitting around waiting for the city. So Mike Warren and Chris Lang spent their own money, and they're not, you know, they're not wealthy, and they bought asphalt. And now they're going around and they're filling the potholes in the city. Now, they're fans of Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation. You know, one of them's got, he said, I've got a poster on my wall of Ron.
And he's basically a libertarian on the show.
Yeah.
In real life, he does not seem to be at all the actor that portrays him, but yes.
Right. Okay. So he said that they have gathered about five different friends, these two, and Warren and Lang and sometimes others. They go out on their weekends in their spare time and they fix the worst potholes in the city. We want to fill a lot of potholes. We want people to help out and see that we don't need to rely on this monopoly of a government for it. I want that to be what starts the people taking charge about of their own life and start talking about change. The city is going to fail at their own monopoly. Why should they have that monopoly? The Department of Public Works audit rated the city's roads poor, said it would take $732 million to upgrade them to fair condition. So they don't have a permit for what they're doing.
This is awesome.
I know. But they say the city and the police officers, they're not stopping them. Betsy Whitmore, chief of communications for the Indianapolis Department of Public Works, said in an email that obtaining a permit to work on city-owned streets and right-of-way is important so the city knows what's going on. What kind of answer is that? I mean, I love that answer. But what? That's like a Texan. Hey, you just let us know what you're doing in the streets. Can you imagine doing this in New York?
I can't. That's, though, also... seems like a way that they're saying you better get a permit or this is going to stop. No,
I don't know. So far, Lang, one of the guys, estimates they spend between $800 and $1,000 for tools and for asphalt. Part of the money came from their own paychecks and donations for their GoFundMe page campaign to fix Maroads, M-U-H, Maroads.
I love these guys.
I know. The two started April 2017 after Warren saw a video of anarchists in Portland patching their city streets.
This is hilarious.
I love this. The anarchists in Oregon say that capitalism and government are not necessary for society to function, according to the Oregonian. Okay, so these guys don't necessarily have a lot in common, except, you know... capitalism, all right, in Oregon doesn't work, but they both believe we don't need the government to do the things that they don't do well. We can do this. Lang and Warren say they are not anarchists and do not want to replace the Department of Public Works, but they thought a similar grassroots repair effort would help solve some of the problems on side streets and call on the city to provide better service.
That's really interesting because, I mean, one of the classic complaints against libertarianism is, what are you, you want just private businesses to run all the roads?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I mean, we could see how it works when you drive around, let's say, a business.
Mm-hmm.
How many entrances to Walmart are in complete disrepair? They're not, because they want people to drive on those roads and come into the store. So they make sure that they're kept up. Mm. If you give private business an incentive... to do these things, and they will be done better. I love this, though. This is a great idea because this, it's interesting. It's not, because there was a story we talked about with Toronto a few months ago where
I hate this story and I simultaneously love this story.
Yeah, because it's, the outcome is unfortunate, but Toronto said they needed stairs to go down this little walk. This little hill. I mean, it's a little, not even a hill. It's
like a park, right?
Right. It was like a, you know, from one level of like parking lot into the park. It was a very short stair. I mean, it was 10 stairs, 12 stairs.
Yeah.
And it was going to be $55,000 to $60,000 for them to install these stairs. Well, a local guy is just like, yeah, what's $55,000? He spent $550 of his own money.
He bought the lumber and the concrete.
Yep. Built the stairs himself. Put them in, perfectly fine stairs, and problem solved, until, of course, Toronto got wind of it and then came in and tore the stairs down because they didn't like the way it was done. Now, of course, you're going to always have those issues.
But the point that I think he was trying to make was it doesn't take $60,000 to make stairs.
Exactly.
It doesn't take that.
We all know it doesn't.
Yes.
I mean, we even hear this with the wall, where they're talking about the wall on the southern border, and they're like, oh, it's going to cost... you know, $25 billion. There's like $25 billion for a wall? Like, I understand that it's government and everything seems to cost more, but does that sound even remotely coherent?
May I just say this? Listen to what these two guys in Indiana said. They were asked, are you worried about getting hit? While it seems like two people can actually fill potholes, there is a supporting group to protect the workers from traffic. This can include an extra staff to hold warning signs for drivers and a driver of a blocker truck to provide a barrier between pothole filling workers and traffic. Whitmore said, usually The city uses 5 to 6 people. We pretty much get it done with 2.
That's great.
It is.
Because there are, obviously, like if you had just guys kind of coming around and building bridges across things, like you might have some issues. Maybe there's not engineering necessary. But if you have an understanding of how to do this and can do it safely. And the other part is, like, with the exception of getting hit while you're filling the pothole, it used to have nothing in it, right? Like, I mean, if they put marshmallows inside of it, it would probably be better than what it was. So it's hard to do damage when you're filling a pothole.
It's remarkable. And now, who will be the first to stop these guys? Because they just, I mean, it's not gonna. I mean, do you imagine that in New York City? I remember when New York City began to change me. And I was standing at a subway or someplace, and there was garbage blowing around everywhere. Now, I'm in some cities, I'm in towns and things, and I see garbage, I'll pick it up and I'll put it in the trash can. I don't do that in New York. You don't ever do that in New York for multiple reasons.
There's usually needles attached to each piece of garbage.
Yeah, so you don't do that in New York. But I remember seeing the trash blowing, and I remember thinking to myself, about a year and a half into New York, when the hell is the city going to do something about this? And it just took me by surprise. I was like, what? And it was in front of our building. And I was complaining about the city. If here, go out and pick it up. Go out and sweep.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But you don't do that. And the city makes it impossible for you to want to do anything. They don't want you doing anything. No. Don't move that.
I mean, a lot of that is, you know, people justifying their jobs and people, you know. But there's a longer term ideological reason for these things, which is to imprison you to government. I mean, this is what they want you to believe. They like the idea that you're dependent on them. It gives them the control. It gives them the power. It gives them everything. So when, and again, these are little examples of it, but it goes deeper than this. It's people who used to be, I need to go, oh my God, I lost my job. I got to need to get a job. Well, then there was people arguing for 99 weeks of unemployment. Right? 99 weeks. That was never something. Like, look, there are reasons. There are reasons that you know, these things pop up. But that it's a change in mindset in which we demand from the government things that we used to demand of ourselves.
It is remarkable that I think this is beginning to change. I really think this is beginning to change. Let me go to Andy in Washington, who has possibly an example. Hello, Andy.
Good morning, fellas.
You're in Washington State?
Yes, sir.
Where? What part?
Yakima Valley, Eastern Washington.
Okay. Eastern Washington. All right. Tell me what's going on.
Well, you had made a comment, one of you did, a bit ago about an Idaho school that does some concealed carry.
Mm-hmm.
We have at least 2 here just in the Yakima Valley that also do. And I know there's, well, at least a couple more that are talking about it.
And so people are starting, the teachers are starting to conceal carry?
Well, it's not so much teachers as it is admin and or concealed carry security guards. But, in fact, while we're on the subject, it's an I-1620, I think. They're trying to get names to get it on the ballot for November to allow concealed carry for almost any staff, I believe, that passes the security and training.
So when you said Yakima, I responded, okay. Meaning, okay, I understand your phone call now, because I saw that you were talking, you wanted to talk about concealed carry teachers in Washington State. Washington State is a really good example of this. There are two states. I mean, it's not even the same state. You go Seattle and Yakima. It's a completely different world from one side of the state to the other. You do that in California. You drive, you know, 25 miles, and it's a different state. The people think differently. So how do you think it's going to go over, Andy, you know, in the Seattle area?
You know, actually, the gentleman that started the initiative, the name gathering for the Initiative 1621, he's actually from Bellevue, I believe.
Oh, my gosh.
Or Bellevue somewhere, which really surprised me.
But, yeah.
You know, you're correct, though. The Eastern and Western Washington, the same with Oregon and or California,
yeah, yeah.
It's like two complete states. Western, well, I mean, you're from Washington. Western Washington, it's two counties, has enough population to overrule the vote for the entire state.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I don't know how we bring this together other than I think there's a growing number of people, especially in these really divided areas and in states that are failing, that people are starting to say, okay, guys, I don't want to play teams anymore. What do we do to make this work? And common sense is starting to take a toehold, not a foothold, but a toehold in some of these very, very progressive states. Have you seen any of that, Andy?
A little, yeah, not a ton, but, you know, you look around Seattle and things are so crazy. You know, there comes a point where even somebody who's absolutely anti-gun has to realize that we have to do something, and what we've been doing for, you know, umpteen years isn't working.
Yeah. Andy, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Sort of feels like the momentum of all of this is going to help these situations. Like, there wasn't a way easily to do a map of all, you know, potholes, right? It would have been a pain for people to do that. But now with crowdsourcing and apps and all these things, I mean, like, you look at
change.
Waze is that company that does the traffic, you know, like your GPS app. And it's like people are constantly reporting when everything from something's in the road or a car is pulled over on the side of the road, and you pull up and you're like, how long has this car been here? An hour? And there's 25 reports of this one car pulled over to the side of the road that doesn't even affect traffic flow at all. It's because people are constantly reporting, and as this stuff improves and people are involved in it, you think it's going to be easier. The momentum of the technology.
Well, you know how Google gets Google traffic, right?
Just people, just monitoring people as they drive, right?
It's tracking your phone. So you've got your phone in your car, you're driving, it sees when you're slowing down, that goes and is fed up into the system, and it creates this map.
I'm old enough, Glenn, to remember when traffic cams were this big thing, and they were like, oh my God, you could check your traffic on your way to work because of traffic cams that the government put up to see certain roads. Think of how ancient that is now.
Oh, I know.
I mean, that is just,
well, the big signs that say that hang over, you know, hey, slow down, or this amount of time to, you know, the next exit. Well, I don't need that.
Right.
It's like, oh, really? Well, that's super. I'll watch that on my magic box at home before I leave every day. Here's our sponsor this half hour, Simply Safe Home Security, and I'm thrilled to have them as a sponsor and thank them for sponsoring this program and making this segment possible. Simply Safe has completely redesigned the security system for your home, and it has taken years. I mean, I saw the beginnings of this, I think about 2-3 years ago, and what they were ready to announce at the time, some things changed and they realized, you know what, we can make it better than this. Let's wait. And so they spent more time, and I'm telling you, they have thought of everything. You know, people come into your house and they destroy the keypad or the siren. Doesn't matter. Simply Safe is still going to call the police. You can cut the power lines or the phone lines. It's still going to call the police. You want to have cameras, but you want to make sure that nobody's watching you in your home. This is one of the things they spend a lot of time and money on. They've designed a shutter that you can actually hear, that when you arm the cameras, they open up and you hear them all open and click. And when you disarm and you're home, and you can hear it, so you know if that camera is ever being activated. It's the best system ever, and it's $14.99 a month for monitoring, and you own the system, and there's no contracts. Simply Safe. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Protect your family the way we do. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Hey, just a quick personal note. I'd ask for some prayers for Robert Morris. He's a friend of mine and a good man. He's from Gateway Church here and huge positive influence in the community. He was medevaced to the hospital yesterday for some complications after some surgery. And just keep Robert Morris in your prayers.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, once in a while, once in a blue moon, Bill Maher actually says something. He veers into common sense and takes a stand on something that even conservatives can get behind. Friday night was one of those rare occasions. He defended Laura Ingraham on principle. Now, he did come out and say, you know, I also want you to know, this sounds ridiculous, because I think she's a deliberately terrible person. So, I mean, he did qualify it. He's not in love with Laura Ingraham. He's doing something more important. He's standing on principle. So after 2 months of conservatives pointing to the fact that the Parkland Brat Pack should be willing to take some criticism if they're going to launch their attacks on conservatives through big media, someone on the left has finally made that same argument, and it turns out it's Bill Maher. Here's what he said.
But it has to do with the Parkland kids and guns and free speech. Now, I think those kids did a great thing. They put this issue in a place we've never had it before, and I wish them success. But, you know, if you're going to be out there in the arena and make yourselves the champions of this cause, people are going to have the right, I think, to argue back. Okay. Maybe you shouldn't say that about a 17-year-old, but again, he is in the arena, and then he calls for a boycott of her sponsors. Now, what is, really, is that American to call for
let me explain something.
And he complains about bullying. Bullying.
I have been the victim of a boycott.
I lost a job once. It is wrong. You shouldn't do this by team. You should do it by principle.
Wow. Yes. Yes. So empathy is a huge missing ingredient in our national dialogue. So is common sense and clear thinking. But it's what allowed Bill Maher to defend Laura Ingraham, because he knows what she's going through. After the 9/11 attacks, he disagreed with characterizing the hijackers as cowards. He said, "We've been cowards lobbying cruise missiles from 2,000 miles away." Well, that led to a boycott of his sponsors on ABC, which then canceled the show called Politically Incorrect. One of the most amazing things ever. That's why, in principle, right after 9/11, and you can imagine how popular this was, I took the stand of supporting Bill Maher, not for what he said, but what part of Politically Incorrect did you not understand, ABC? That's what this man does.
Why you hired him.
Right. And if we can't, we cannot let name calling and political thought come under control from a mob, left or right. That's why you don't want democracy. Democracy is mob rule. It's majority wins. That doesn't work. And by the way, this isn't even majority wins on these boycotts. This is just a handful of people who are really dedicated to making people's lives miserable, and so they get their way. But Maher got this right. This is about principle. And the worst lesson that the Parkland kids and the rest of America's youth are learning for all of this is that an inability to agree to disagree. We have to be able to get there. It's not enough for the left anymore. If they don't like your viewpoint, their only response is to try to destroy your livelihood and drum you out of the market. To me, that is much more dangerous to society than any number of guns.
It's Monday, April 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So there was a movie that premiered on HBO over the weekend. It was a movie about Penn State. Robert De Niro played Joe Paterno. And it ended looking like things were even worse. I don't want to give away the end line in case you want to watch it, but it was not making Joe Paterno look like he was Like there was any shadow of a doubt that this guy was a bad guy. Well, John Ziegler is a friend of ours and a friend of the program. He's a columnist at Mediaite, and he also runs the podcast, The World According to Zig, which is worth a listen at freespeechbroadcasting.com. John has been following the Joe Paterno case for a while and will not let it go. He was writing a massive story for Newsweek. It took months and months to do. They spent a lot of money on it, and then at the last minute they pulled it and killed the story.
And quickly, Glenn, this is my fault, and I do this all the time. I always confuse Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. It was Al Pacino who played Paterno. It's my fault. I did that to you in the break. My bad. John has been all over the story for forever, and he joins us now. John, first of all, did you actually watch Paterno on HBO?
I did eventually bring myself to watch it, and I was able to do so without vomiting, which was, I thought, an accomplishment. But it was interesting historical fantasy. It was a fairy tale based in a media created myth. And to be fair, to say I followed the story for a while.
No, you were a stalker.
I'm the only person who has looked at this from an independent perspective, not within the media industrial complex that jumped to a ridiculous conclusion in 2 days back in November of 2011. And I know more, and this is not an exaggeration, I know more about this whole Penn State Paterno Jerry Sandusky story than anybody on the planet, including Jerry Sandusky. And Jerry Sandusky would be the first person to tell you that. And it's been the worst decision of my life, but it's also been the best work of my life, because what I have found is a completely and totally different reality than the myth that you've been told for the last 7 years.
So, John, I want to get into this because I'm so fascinated by you and this cross that you carry, because I know what it's like to know something and no one will listen. I mean, I got the caliphate is coming. Oh, you're an idiot. Okay. Yeah. All right. And it will drive you out of your mind. But take me to Newsweek, because you thought, okay, finally somebody's going to do something. And Newsweek, what was it, like 11,000 words?
20,000 words 20, on the website, 15,000 in the magazine. Here's what happened. For many of your listeners and viewers probably remember that a little over a year ago, you guys had me in Dallas for a full day of interviews about this. You're the only ones with the guts to do anything like this. And I thought at the time, all right, you know what? That's pretty much the end of this for me, because there's nowhere else for this to go. Nobody, you guys don't really care about being part of the media club. And no other big media is ever going to accept this, because they're too invested in their myth, their Santa Claus myth. And so we got a huge break at the end of last year, where Newsweek hired as their top editor a guy by the name of Bob Rowe. And Bob Rowe had worked on the McMartin preschool sex abuse case here in California many years ago, which turned out to be a fraud. So Bob Rowe got it. And Bob Rowe didn't care about any kind of criticism he was going to get. He also had a previous relationship with my co-author on this, what would end up being this proposed and accepted Newsweek piece, Ralph Cipriano, an LA Times and Philadelphia Inquirer reporter. He and I have been working on the case for quite a while together. And so he hired Ralph. Ralph brought me on as his co-writer. And then so this was back in October of last year. And we had gotten a huge other break in that Ralph had been leaked all of the settlement documents from Penn State's $118 million that they gave the 36 accusers of Jerry Sandusky. And I think all of the free report documents. And I went to Philadelphia for 2 days and reviewed the documents, and they're unbelievable. I was positive I was right when I was with you guys over a year ago. Now it's not even remotely close.
Okay, so what did you see in the documents that make you say that?
It's all science fiction, Glenn, every bit of it. The guys who were at trial told completely different stories when it came time to getting their money from Penn State, because that's how Penn State was paying out their money. We know the so-called 70s accusers that supposedly implicated Joe Paterno that got referred to in that Al Pacino movie, by the way, incorrectly. They couldn't even get the right accuser. They can't even get their myth right in this movie. They referred to a 1976 accuser. They meant 1971. These guys' stories are hilarious, And I now know the key thing, Glenn, and this actually goes kind of to the Parkland situation. You know how the Parkland kids are protected, right? That's nothing compared to the Sandusky accusers, because I now know their identities. And we have this bizarre situation where adults, sometimes very old adults, getting state money, millions of dollars, are not allowed to have their names. It's not a legal situation. It's a media decision because out of cowardice. They're not allowed to have their names be public because that would be insensitive to sex abuse victims. Well, guess what? When you know their identities, you know a lot about them, and you know how ridiculous their stories are. All you have to do is go to their Facebook pages. They're all still huge Penn State fans. They're all still Joe Paterno fans. They've got pictures of themselves at Penn State games in Penn State uniforms and Penn State shirts. Their children in Penn State shirts. They're all got massive, expensive sports cars. They're all married. They're all heterosexual, which I think goes to the heart of this whole baloney narrative. There's nothing about the story that makes any damn sense. None of it. And when you consider the fact, and part of what Newsweek was very excited about, was that we have had a 3.5-year sting operation on the number one lawyer named Andrew Shubin in State College, Pennsylvania, and his therapist with unimpeachable evidence that they took this fake accuser for 3.5 years. They embraced him. They manipulated him. They gave him a completely false story. Then when he tried to tell him he wasn't really a victim of Jerry Sandusky, they convinced him that he was, even though he wasn't. And he got diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder for something that didn't happen.
That he says didn't happen, right? Because you've told the story.
Glenn, let's be clear. This is a purposely fake accuser. He's a guy who was in the Second Mile charity, Jerry Sandusky's charity. He knew him for much of his youth. His mother knew him. And he decided, you know, Jerry is innocent. This whole thing is baloney. He went to the trial and was told by Matt Sandusky, who is now, you know, an alleged victim of Jerry, that this is all bull crap. He knows that Jerry is innocent, and he decided to try to prove it. And so he went to the number one lawyer in the case. They completely embraced him, and he sat him down and totally changed his story. Made up a story because he knew that the original story he was given was so ridiculous and that Penn State wouldn't pay it because it didn't fit the criteria. So he gave him a brand new story. And he met with a therapist over 100 times.
Okay, all right. The good thing is you're not passionate about this at all, Chuck.
The important part, but maybe the most important part of the fake accuser thing, and this I think goes to how this kind of thing could happen, because everyone wants to know, how could this happen? Well, this is a perfect storm, and one of the perfect storms is everybody thinks everyone else is vetting. We have evidence the therapist told our fake accuser that the lawyer had vetted the accusers, and we have evidence the lawyer telling the fake accuser that the therapist had vetted the fake accusers, and Penn State thought the lawyers were vetting the accusers. Nobody was. There was no vetting. I got contacted this weekend by a guy out of the blue. I get this happens all the time, where someone who got $7 million from Penn State, this guy got a call from his lawyer, and then from the guy who got $7 million, offering him a truck if he would tell his lawyer that he had witnessed Jerry Sandusky kissing him, which never happened. And the guy told him to go pound sand because he knew the whole thing was a scam. I get this all the time. This was a scam.
Listen. I recognize this frustration. I've lived this frustration. So, John, so you had this huge story in Newsweek. When we come back, I want you to tell us what happened, because all of a sudden it was dropped. And I need you to tell the story of what you think happened to get this story spiked. All right, if you're looking to sell your home, get it sold on time and for the most amount of money without all kinds of excuses, you need a great real estate agent. So go to realestateagentitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. Over 1,000 agents all across America. They're just like you. Their word is their bond, and they are They are fans of the show. They share your same sensibilities. We have the people who have sold their houses, and they say, I kind of bummed that we, you know, we're done now because I feel like I've made a new friend. Our agents are fully vetted and handpicked for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. These are the people in your community that are going to get your home sold and for the most amount of money. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test. The results are off the charts. Find out for yourself. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Get the most amount of money for your house and your house sold on time. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So at freespeechbroadcasting.com, you can find the John Ziegler article that was written for Newsweek and then spiked at the last minute after months and months and months of agonizing over every word and meeting with attorneys and everything else to make sure they had it all right. John, we've got about 3 minutes. Why did they spike this? Is he there?
The segment was that we had Bob Rowe, this guy with a history, with a similar story in a prior relationship with my co-writer. And I was urging Ralph and Bob, we got to get this out now. We're hoping to get it out last year because I knew that things were not good at Newsweek. And in this environment, in this story, anything that can go wrong will go wrong. Well, Bob got fired the day after the Super Bowl. And I thought we were done at that point. But those who took over for him said, wow, this is a great story. And they were so enthusiastic about the fake accuser and the fact that we have a brand new date for the infamous Mike McQueary episode that blows his whole story apart. And we've got all sorts of other bombshell evidence. By the way, the best place to go to find this is at framingpaterno.com, my website, framingpaterno.com, where I posted the entire 20,000-word story that was going to be on the Newsweek website. And one day before the deadline, everything fell apart, and I believe the short answer is because of abject fear. I think that somebody within the infrastructure, whether it was the lawyer or whatever, realized that they were going to get a whole bunch of crap for this and that it just simply was not worth it. And I frankly think the biggest problem we had, Glenn, is our evidence and our facts are so powerful that we cannot conclude anything other than the fact that the whole thing is a scam and that Jerry Sandusky, as bizarre as it sounds, is actually an innocent man. Had our evidence not been as strong, I don't think they would have been as afraid of the story. They would have published it, and instead I was forced to put it up at framingpaterno.com. It's amazing stuff. I hope people will check it out.
So this is not written in your usual style of, you know, John Ziegler rant. You can tell that this is, you've labored over every word, you've checked every word. You had attorneys look at this all the way through?
Yeah, the two editors vetted the whole thing, and it was I had discussions with the printer and distributor of the magazine because I wanted to get extra copies. I wanted to make sure they got extra copies into the state of Pennsylvania. I mean, this was as done a deal as possible. They took the cover away from us at the last minute and put Vladimir Putin on, but I was like, okay, fine. It's the biggest story Newsweek's ever run. It's, at least it's out there. And then everything fell apart literally at the last minute, and it's frankly because, Glenn, as you know, popularity trumps truth now in the media, and this is the ultimate proof of that. This story, this whole perfect storm, proves that in spades. The truth no longer matters. This is not a conspiracy theory. What I laid out makes far more sense than the media myth that you've been told for the last 7 years of this incredible tragedy.
You know, John, I don't know if you've ever heard the story of Tokyo Rose and the real story behind her, but when I was writing one of our books, and I took her story and told her story, she was wrongly accused. She served two prison sentences. The government trumped up the charges, silenced witnesses in the Navy that were going to be witnesses for her in her defense, and she was eventually pardoned. She's lived through this. This is not a new thing. I mean, that was started by Walter Winchell.
Right.
They wanted ratings.
Well, it's a good example, but I think this one is way worse because so many people were harmed, the three administrators, the paternal legacy,
yes,
the reputation of a university, hundreds of millions of dollars put out there. A guy's gonna, an innocent man, and very strong view, is going to die in prison. And most importantly, if this can happen, our system is broken. Our media is broken. The truth must still matter. And if it doesn't matter in this case, it doesn't matter at all, because it's clear cut when you get the details and you put it all together like we have in a very credible fashion. Please check it out at framingpaterno.com. And Glenn, thank you guys for caring about the truth. You're the only ones that do. And it's kept me somewhat sane over the last couple.
Yeah, somewhat. I would leave it at somewhat. John Ziegler, thanks so much. Framingpaterno.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck.
All right, we've got a couple of things. We got to race through a couple of things. We have some really important stuff to talk about. But I saw Ready Player One this weekend. I read the book, and everyone told me if you've read the book, you're going to hate the movie. It is not the book. But it is a great movie.
Oh, okay. Good.
It is.
Yeah, I think it's good.
It's a great Steven Spielberg movie.
I think great is a little too far.
Oh, I think it's
good.
I think it's fun, like
it's
E.T.
fun.
And it's
definitely
you
fun.
Know, Indiana Jones. It's a fun
it's
movie.
It's not a classic like E.T. though. E.T. is a classic.
No, but it's good. Yeah. I thought it was really good.
It's
I really
good.
Liked it. I really liked it. And you guys saw
Chappaquiddick.
Chappaquiddick.
Yeah. Yes. Really like that as well.
Really good.
I mean, you know,
and I thought they were incredibly fair on Chappaquiddick.
It did it
incredibly
right,
fair.
Right?
Yeah.
It did not feel political at all.
Mm-mm.
It I think gave him in some ways the benefit of the doubt on, you know, never said he was having an affair with her.
Though it did seem like that's where that night may have ended.
Yes.
But clearly.
They never
said it.
Nope.
And the one hole is, how do you get out of the car? And if he got out of the car, why couldn't she get out of the car?
Yeah.
Why
couldn't
he have gone back the same way he came out and pulled her out?
Yeah. And bizarrely, he claims to just have forgotten how he got out of the car.
Yeah, but again, I would not look a gift horse in the mouth.
No.
I mean, I'm not. I can't believe Hollywood told this story in the way
you noticed,
they did.
Though, they didn't tell it while he was alive.
Oh, yep.
They waited until 9 years after his death.
True. I'll take it.
I know.
We talked
at
least it's restoring history.
Yeah.
What was the genesis of the script again? It was
the election of Barack Obama. I think it was Bill Maher said, well, if Ted Kennedy would have endorsed Hillary Clinton, then Hillary would have won. But he endorsed Obama.
Yeah, that's right.
And these two writers were like, they're from Texas. They were a big fan of the Kennedys. And they're like, you know, why didn't he ever run for president? And they started looking into it. And they were holy cow, how do I not know this story?
Yeah.
He did run for president.
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. They didn't know.
He couldn't even get the Democrat nomination.
Yeah, no. That happens when you kill people.
Yeah. A Chappaquiddick could have had a little something to do with that.
But I mean, he was praised up until, I mean, he spoke at Obama, that the conventions.
Oh, they loved him.
He, the lion of the Senate.
Always he's loved him.
Still, really, Obamacare, really the reason, you know, I mean, that didn't get to change was because of his death. I mean, if you remember, I mean, it's really, he had a heck of a run after that.
Oh, he
despite
did.
That craziness.
Yeah. He did.
Evil is an actual legitimate power. Anyway.
and if you look at the Kennedy history, it's hard not to think that there was something going on with that family. Holy cow.
I think there was one good guy in it, and it was Bobby Kennedy. And the women. I think the women were good. But I really like Bobby Kennedy. Jack was, I mean, you know, it was his dad. The root of all evil was Joe P.
Yeah.
I mean, and was that not a great performance?
Yes.
He had like eight words
really good.
In that movie.
Really,
and
but he
boy,
was great in that.
Oh, he was great.
You got just where he's coming from.
Oh, yeah.
He was pretty cagey. He was pretty brilliant. And he was a millionaire by the time he was 30. Yeah. And some of it, you know, he came from shady sources.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Most people believe he had mob ties. Most people believe he ran liquor during the Prohibition. But he also had some incredible business savvy. And he turned what was maybe between 5 and 10 million into like 400 million by 1940.
Yeah, and then as soon as you get into the presidency, into the Senate or House, you know, you can use insider trading to do all kinds of
stuff.
Well,
he was doing insider trading before he got anybody in the House or Senate. He was doing that when it was legal, though. It was legal. It was shady, unethical, but legal.
Okay.
This falls into the category, by the way, just quickly, of movies that we all wish get made by Hollywood, and if they make one, we should go see it.
Yeah. Like
Not just because of that. Right. This is a good movie.
It's a great movie.
It is a good movie.
It's a good movie.
My daughter, who's 18, I thought she was going to be so bored.
Right?
She loved it.
Loved it.
Loved it.
I watched it with 20-somethings. They loved it.
Yeah.
They loved it.
But it only brought in $6.2 million. I don't know what it cost to make, but it was only seventh. So go see it. It's really good. It's really good.
Really good.
How did it do? Did it have a lot of theaters or no?
Let's see. It's in...
you guys worked that out. I need to bring Troy Walker in.
Oh, cool.
Troy is Troy's actually a friend of yours that you and Doc found on the Blaze Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him. Troy? What was it? A week ago?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You guys came down, and you're just one of the most honest, decent, honorable guys I think I've met. You know, you shake a man's hand, you look him in the eye, and you can usually tell. And you are so sincere. What you're trying to do is you're making these wooden flags, and they're really great, and they're great to hang on the wall and everything else. And but you're not making any of these for your profit. You're a former military man, and you are trying to bury the dead of some of these servicemen that come back and kill themselves.
Yes, sir. Not only do we pay for suicides, but we pay for any veteran who cannot afford a funeral.
Because there's no other recourse for them. Right, Troy? There's the VA provides
that is,
them
that
up
is true.
To...
The VA only...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, they provide up to $300. They provide another $362 if you die at the VA. That's why you see a mass of suicides at the VA, because they're trying to get that extra $362.
Oh, my gosh. That's the first I've heard of that.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh.
Yep.
Wow. And it might not even be, it might not even be 300, right, Troy? They start at $25.
No. Yeah. Like I said on your show, we have yet to see two payments the same out of 126 funerals. It's anywhere between $26 and $298 is what I've seen.
Jeez. Wait. Well, I mean, I've never paid for a funeral. But I can't imagine that getting somebody buried is cheap. Isn't that, I mean, even if you go cheap, that's in the thousands, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes, sir. And you get free burials at national cemeteries. However, you have to pay for the coffin, transportation, and embalming of the individual, which usually runs anywhere between $2,500 and $3,500.
My mom's funeral last year was $15,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And that wasn't extravagant.
Not at all.
Okay, so Troy, first of all, let me just give the information. Buy one of these wooden flags. They're great. You can hang them on your wall, and all of the proceeds go to help people out. Dogtagfurniture.com. Dogtagfurniture.com. How much are they? About $100?
They start off $125, and that includes free shipping. And then for every logo you want, it goes up from there.
Okay, so Troy, tell me about I think it was a World War II veteran that you just buried.
Yes, sir. Sergeant Whelan, he dropped out of high school, and it was 8 weeks and 2 days after his 18th birthday, he landed on the beaches of Normandy for the first time.
Mm.
He went through Normandy, got wounded, got a Silver Star at the beaches of Normandy, went through France, got wounded again. They sent him to Bastogne for R&R to heal. And we all know what happened at Bastogne. Where he received his third Silver Star and his second Purple Heart.
Wait. Three Silver Stars?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Holy cow. Okay.
Mm.
And he ended up getting his final third Purple Heart when he was just crossing the border into Germany when he lost his foot. He came back to Minnesota. He worked in a factory all his life. Made some bad investments, 08. Ended up in assisted living. And then when he died, they took all his assets and they called the VA and said, hey, come and get your veteran. And the VA goes, no, we don't do that. We'll give you $300, up to $300.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
So how did you find out about it?
The casualty. Well, actually, I have ties with the Minnesota Casualty Office, who ended up calling me, the National Guard ended up calling me and say, hey, we have this veteran here. We don't know what to do with him. And we heard you pay for funerals. Will you take care of him?
Oh.
And that's when I saw a service record, and I'm like, this guy's, you know, these are the kinds of people that need to be remembered forever. They fought for us. They endured the worst of the worst, and they should at least get a burial.
Hmm. Boy, that doesn't even sound like a sentence that should be, that needs to be uttered. Mm-hmm. They deserve a burial. Troy, I can't thank you enough. And again, just meeting you just last week was a thrill for me. You know, it's nice to meet people who are so genuine and are so beyond the self-service and gratification. And what you guys are doing is really, really remarkable and good. And thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for everything you've done. And, you know, we're the only veteran organization that does this. Every other veteran organization, nonprofit, stops the minute the veteran dies. We're the only ones that go beyond that.
Can people just make a donation? Can they go to you and make a donation?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Please make donations. That way the 100% of your donation goes towards the funeral fund. We have to sell 45 flags to pay for one funeral. Average funeral is, we pay out an average of $3,600. 100% of the proceeds goes to pay for burial. I do not take a salary, neither does my wife. My mother-in-law is going to be answering phones today, and I got two helpers in the shop today, all volunteers.
Awesome.
DogTagFurniture.com. Thank you so much, Troy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. He gets nothing out of it. I know. Nothing. He's just a former service guy, and he's like, I needed to do something to help. Just and he said, I could not believe that no one pays for these guys' funerals. Out of
72,000 veterans organizations, zero until Troy paid for funerals. Zero. It's amazing.
So go to the website now. It is dogtagfurniture.com. Dog, he needs a better
one.
dogtagfurniture.com. But call them up. Make a donation. You can buy the flag if you want. They're nice. You can hang them on the wall. Or just, as he said, you know, they have to pay for the wood and the shipping and everything out of that. If you don't need the flag, just make a donation because these are remarkable people. A 3-time Silver Star winner, and no one was going to bury him. Remarkable. DogTagFurniture.com. Back in a minute. It's amazing how you can do something in your life and do something really truly remarkable and then it's meaningless to later generations. I mean, 3-time Silver Star winner. Man, I wish I would have known him. I wish I would have been able to talk to him. You know, did anybody talk to him towards the end? What was that like? Tax season is here. Identity thieves are at it again. According to the IRS, they're filing fake tax returns with stolen personal identification information, like Social Security numbers. Everybody is vulnerable to this, but the Southwest is particularly a bad region for identity theft, with Nevada being the worst state. And while tax fraud is at the top of the mind right now, remember, identity theft affects Americans year-round, and it is a growing problem. Do you know, I mean, I can't even imagine the trouble that we're going to have. You know, remember, Vladimir Putin said the next war is going to be fought with ones and zeros. Did you see what... apparently, an American hacker or hackers did to Iran over the weekend. Yeah, I'll tell you in a minute. Somebody hacked in
to Iran and shut down a lot of their stuff and left the message, don't mess with our elections.
Hmm.
Anyway, there are so many threats and there are so many players out there and so many ways criminals can get into your life. That's why new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection is adding the power of Norton Security to help protect you against the threats to your identity and your devices that you can't see on and fix on your own. If you have a problem, they have the agents that'll work to fix it. Now, nobody can stop all cyber threats and prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But the new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover the threats that you might otherwise miss. So go to LifeLock.com now or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code BECK for an additional 10% off your first year. That's promo code BECK, an additional 10% off now at LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. I'm glad you're here. There's a couple of stories. One of the big stories on the Blaze today is the woman who bashes Mike Rowe's Worth Ethics Scholarship. Her son was applying for a scholarship to become a welder. And she read the pledge that he had written. And can you look up his pledge real quick, Stu? He wrote a pledge, and it's a sweat pledge, and it's good.
A skill and work ethic aren't taboo.
Yeah, that's what the pledge means. And it's like, you know, you got to work hard, you got to take responsibility for yourself, everything else. So Karen Siegel said she was appalled when her son showed her the sweat pledge requirement. She said, "Where did you come up with this nonsense? There's so many things wrong with this document, I don't even know where to begin. Suffice to say, we will not be applying." So Mike Rowe wrote and said, "To be clear, I have absolutely no interest in paying for the training if he doesn't share my opinions on the importance of hard work ethics, a positive attitude, delayed gratification, and personal responsibility. Sorry, but I made a promise to the people that contribute to this fund, and I'm not going to bend the rules. Fortunately, lots of scholarship funds will hand out money with no strings attached, and if you poke around, I'm sure you'll find one that's more in line with your worldview. But it's been my sad duty to inform lots of angry parents that this particular pile of free money might not be for them or for their children." I love Mike Rowe. We'll see you at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV with the latest on Russia and what comes next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.